Hello, everyone. So I think this might be a bit of a surprise. You were expecting Edwin today, but he'll be back with us. He's just not able to join us today. So I hope you're doing well. I can see someone's written, yeah, thanks for the initiative to change to a good time for Asia. Yeah, great to be with you, Pavlad. It's 5:45 in the morning for me, and I must say my mind is much better at this time than the evening time that I usually join you anyway. So I hope those of you who are joining from the US are evening people. It's not too much of a challenge. And if you'd like to, it'd be lovely to hear where you are joining from. Nice to get a sense of who we're meeting at this slightly different hour of the day. So I think let's begin, as always, just with a little bit of practice to kind of settle in, and then we'll move into the main session. Great. Lovely to hear where you're from. Michigan, New York City, Montreal. Wonderful. Yeah, truly global. Okay, so let's just, as always, find a comfortable posture. The spine is gently upright, helping to bring a quality of presence, quality of wakefulness. And then the body is relaxed, and the mind's relaxed and at ease. And so just resting the mind for a few moments in this quality of open presence. We're not choosing any particular support, we're just simply resting the mind as it is. And when we do this, we don't want to try and block anything in our experience. We don't need to try and accomplish anything. We're really resting, allowing things to be as they are. And now, from this quality of open presence, just bringing the awareness to the breath, knowing that you're breathing in as you breathe in, knowing that you're breathing out as you breathe out. And as we rest on the breath, if we see that there's a yearning, a desire for our experience to be in any way different, we just recognize that desire, that attachment. And in that recognition, we find freedom. We disentangle ourselves from attachment. And similarly, if we see in our experience that we're resisting something that's arising, trying to push that away, any resistance, we relinquish aversion. And lastly, by being with the breath as it is, seeing its nature, changing moment by moment. The coming together of many causes and conditions. We free ourselves from ignorance. We see the breath as it is. Just a light touch of awareness of the breath without trying to concentrate, without trying to block thoughts. And then, if you've had your eyes closed, if you'd like to gently open them. Bringing awareness back into the room that you're sitting in. And keeping this thread of knowing as we come together for our precious time. To check in about these teachings, these practices, and be together. So, again, a big welcome to everyone who's joining today. It's wonderful to see where you're all coming from. And as I said at the beginning, Edwin isn't with us today, but he'll be back soon. So I'm I think where we're at, maybe I could just give a little recap of where we are in the course. So we're pretty much coming to the very end of the Essence course. And as you probably have experienced, our exploration has been very, very broad. We've covered a lot of content, but without a lot of depth. So it's really been a focus on breadth rather than depth. We've talked about the root of suffering. We've talked about how we dispel that suffering through the practices of shamatha meditation and vipassana meditation. And we've kind of dipped our toe into the water of the four foundations of mindfulness, a practice which, as we've heard, was something that the Buddha taught as a way to be completely awakened, to go completely beyond our suffering, the Satipatthana, the four foundations of mindfulness. And so we've covered that in just 8 weeks, but we will come back to this topic. It is a huge topic, and we will go into each aspect in far greater detail in the immersion course, which is beginning in just a few days' time. So I thought it might be helpful today to talk a little bit about Rinpoche's last teaching, the practice or the teaching called Inner Freedom, which I was reading up again on that teaching, and it just always amazes me how much he's able to bring in. Edwin and I are really going through all of the material, as he said before, for sort of months further down the road. And as I come back to these earlier teachings, it's amazing. I don't know, it's just the more you understand, the more you go into these topics and then come back and see what Rinpoche said, it's just incredible how much he's given us and how clear those teachings are. It's very easy to listen to them or read to them first time around and sort of think, yeah, I know all that. But as our understanding deepens, as our practice deepens, and we come back to them, it's like, oh, wow, yes, gosh, wow, so interesting, so deep, so rich, so much in there. So that was my experience of going through these teachings ready for today. So I thought what I'd like to do is kind of talk a little bit about the purpose of the four foundations of mindfulness and do a little bit of a recap as to what these look like in our experience, and in particular, kind of thinking about their goal, their aim, their intention, which is to move beyond the afflictions. So it's very helpful to keep in mind the purpose of these practices, which are to completely uproot our suffering. So we're really working with our tangible experience in the here and now and starting to kind of dismantle how our afflictions, how our suffering arises, and find freedom. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the Abhidharma, and we'll see this more and more as we go into the immersion course, is the power of repetition. So all of these practices that we're exploring, they kind of build up a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more each time. When we actually sit on the cushion and experience that in a very embodied way, it's like they actually kind of seep in. They really do seep in. And it's quite amazing to see how a practice at the beginning can feel very unfamiliar and almost kind of disjointed. We feel into it, the body gets used to it, like learning to ride a bike, it becomes kind of second nature. And then we add a little bit more, and we add a little bit more. And by the end, where we come to the final practices that we'll be exploring in the immersion course, all of those elements come into one practice, and we can actually see, we can blend all of these different practices that we've worked with. We kind of blend them all at the end, and yeah, it's quite powerful to undersell it. Okay, so let's begin then really on understanding what the four foundations of mindfulness are really all about. So they're really offering us a direct path to, as I've said, to understanding and reducing these afflictions. And we can see that our root cause for these afflictions is really our desire, our craving. We live in the desire realm. And so it's really this desire, this craving, this clinging to, which Edwin spoke to so beautifully in his Heart to Heart, you know, the five aggregates of clinging. And so it's really that that we're working with these practices. And so we begin with the practice of mindfulness of the mind. Rinpoche is using the word mindfulness and awareness to mean the same thing, awareness of the body. Sorry, did I say the mind? Mindfulness of the mind? I meant to say mindfulness of the body. We begin with mindfulness of the body. And so Rinpoche is using the word mindfulness or awareness to mean the same thing. We can see that bringing awareness to the body is probably the most easy thing that we can do. We clearly have this body. We can bring our awareness right now, you know, sitting on this chair, sitting on the cushion, aware of the tactile sensations in the body. And so, as we've heard already in the Abhidharma, what we're doing here with these practices is we're getting very, very specific. If we think of the Mahamudra practice as being this vast open view and just really resting in that, the mind that is vast and open and seeing everything that's arising from the mind, here it's the absolute opposite. You know, rather than the fruit of the tree, we're going down to the very roots of the tree. We're seeing exactly, breaking down exactly with the most incredible precision what is going on in our experience. So, as we bring awareness to the body, what is it that we are observing? Would anybody like to jump in, have a crack at that? You could either type in the chat or come on live. What is it that we are experiencing when we look at the particular characteristics of the body? What are we seeing?
We're looking. Oh, can I just jump in? This is Pam.
Please.
Sorry, I'll put myself
Happy.
off. There we go. Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, the first aggregate is form, which is our body. It's our bones, our blood, our tissue, everything. But then specifically, they talk about our eyes. That's a sense door. Our nose. That's another sense door. Taste, sound, hearing. So those are all sense doors. So we can actually feel something in the body, but we can also have things come into us through those other modalities, or, you know, through those doors.
Thanks, Pam. Thank you. Would anybody else like to chip in there? What else is going on when we look at the body? What are we specifically looking for? And remembering, like we this whole system, it would be very easy to dissect it in all of these ways. And I think everything that Pam said there is correct.
The elements,
The
like the
elements.
elements of earth and water and fire and air or wind.
Wonderful. So I think Pam, what you were picking up on there is we will go into that, and obviously it is a part of our whole system. But here in the Abhidharma Kosha, that comes in the phenomena. Because as we're saying, you know, sound requires phenomena, an object. And so we have these three parts that come together. There's the object, there's the ability to interpret the object, and then there is the ear itself. And so we'll unpack that a little bit more as we go in. So we've got these elements that make up the body. This is the way that the Buddha broke down our experience. And so, as you said, we've got water, earth, fire, and wind. So how is it that we experience these in the body when we're looking for these? What are we actually noticing? What are we picking up on? How does water arise?
Saliva.
Great, yeah. Saliva. What else?
Blood.
The blood.
Blood. Yeah,
Tears.
blimp. Yeah, wonderful. So it's this
Eyes, the
fluidity.
ear, the fluid
Sorry,
in the eyes,
the fluid in the eyes.
the
Yeah.
fluid.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So as we're doing these practices, we can kind of scan our awareness through the body. And if you choose to, you could even take one element at a time. Look for the water, scan through. Look for the fires. That would be the heat, the warmth. Look for the earth. So that's the hardness, the bones, the contact, anything that's kind of firm. You know, maybe you get a bit of tension in your upper back. Sometimes when I do a lot of sitting, I can really feel that. So that's the earth element, really strong pulsating sensations. And then the wind, so the movement. And so we can approach this practice in many different ways. And as we can see from, you know, it's often good to take one at a time, really clearly see it. And then we can slowly, slowly get a little bit op more open. Those of you that have done sort of like the choiceless, the joy of living, you'll know from those practices, we engage in one object at a time. And then we move into the choiceless practice. We can recognize whatever is coming up because we've really already familiarized ourselves with all of those. Great. So that's really the practice of working with the body. And in particular, we call these the specific characteristics that relate to the body, these elements. Okay, so then we move into the practice of feelings. And so it's quite a natural progression if we think about it. We've got this body, we've got all of these experiences, these elements that are going on. And then from that, we can bring our attention to something which is probably a little bit more subtle. And so the feelings. And so what are we talking about when we're talking about the feelings? How does the Abhidhamma Kosha break these down?
Is that the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral slash indifferent?
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Yeah. So again, these are the particular qualities of the feelings. We have the general characteristics, which we can go into as well, which we will go into, but the specific characteristics that relate to feelings. And so again, how can we move into this practice? What would we do? What would that practice look like?
We notice our reactions.
And it's quite a beautiful. I remember when I first had these teachings a long time ago. You know, it's quite beautiful. It's like a real aha moment when you start to see, gosh, all of my craving, all of my attachment, and it's really very much dependent on these sensations, these experiences in the body as well as the mind. You know, this leaning in, this wanting, this desire, this aversion, this pushing away, as Rinpoche teaches, you know, that's really what we're responding to here. And so it probably is a practice that is, in some ways, a little bit more subtle. It's kind of like the undercurrent that's always playing out in our experience. So I'm sure that you know this already. I'm sure I'm just going over what you're very, very familiar with. But how is this practice for you? Like when you're working with these practices, do you feel like you're seeing that more and more in your day-to-day experience? Are you able to tune into that? Yeah.
One
And
of the
is
things that, oh, I'm sorry.
yes, no, please. Yeah.
One of the things I notice is how quickly it happens. So this is all happening with lightning speed. So something will come in through a sense door, then there'll be this initial very quick reaction of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And then you're moving into labeling it right away. I mean, it happens so quickly that if you are not really mindful and paying attention, it's already gone.
Yeah, beautiful. I think that's one of the key things here. We're kind of slowing down our experience, if we can, you know, like breaking the momentum, breaking that momentum of just being caught up in. And again, it's like it's something that we know intellectually. It's like, oh, yes, we know the feelings, we understand that. But actually bringing that understanding reflecting onto it, reflecting on it, and then really bringing it into our experience, we can just see how crucial, how important the daily meditation practice is to really make any real difference in the flow of life. And so it can be quite subtle feelings or quite obvious, quite strong feelings. But again, it's this precision of knowing what exactly we're looking for. Okay, so then we move into the third foundation of mindfulness. So what's that?
Mindfulness
The mind. Great. I love
mind.
the unison. That was fantastic. Yeah.
Beauty.
So here, what are we looking for when we're looking specifically to the mind? What are the particular characteristics that we're seeing?
Thoughts and feelings or emotions, I guess.
Yeah, wonderful. And so how are we going to experience them as we dissect these down? What are we seeing?
Well, with emotions, there might be pieces of the emotion that a feeling in or a sensation in the body, I guess thoughts or words that might come up, or thoughts, and a kind of an emotion, a tone or a overall kind of atmosphere, I guess, of the feeling.
Anyone else?
Pictures, sometimes images, I think. I remember images.
If I could
Anyone
just
else?
ask a question here. Can you hear me all right? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
It's
What
a little
is
bit
the
breaking up, but have a go.
Let's see, is that better? Is what I want to know is what's the difference between an emotion and a feeling?
So we, those of you who've done the Joy of Living one, will have really experienced the way that Rinpoche unpacks this. But really, if we're understanding it through the lens of the Abhidharma, we can bring in with the emotions. We're really bringing in the feeling aspect. You know, it's really starting to bring in sort of the strong sensations in the body. As soon as we move into an emotion, there's probably more sensations, more of a visceral experience going on, as opposed to just a thought. You know, you could sit down and go through your shopping list, what you need to buy today. You can use those thoughts in a very constructive way, just thinking, planning, whatever. As soon as an emotion starts to come in, there's a little bit more grasping. There's this experience of feeling that's really coming up with the thought. So as you're writing a shopping list, you might think, oh, yes, that chocolate cake. Oh, I can get chocolate croissants for breakfast, you know, and that feeling, that emotion of the desire, the wanting. And then you could think, yeah, oh gosh, no, calories, gosh, no, last time I got on the scales, no, chocolate croissants. And then, you know, the little bit of an aversion might come in, or a bit of, you know, so the emotions are really, there's more of a, yeah, in that way. I hope that kind of makes sense for you.
Well,
So
would you say
with emotions, there will be thoughts, you know, there is the thinking, but it's a little bit richer in our experience, if that's a good way of putting it. It could be emotions can include sort of, you know, I intuition. Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off, Barbara.
pardon me. So the difference between emotions and feelings, they seem to me that the emotions are just a more intense feeling.
That would be a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it could be more intense, Not necessarily. I mean, there we've heard from the Abhidhamma that there is nearly always some feeling tone going on in our experience. There's nearly always some feeling tone. And as, yeah, I suppose as you're saying, an emotion could be something a little bit more intense, a little bit deeper, a little bit stronger. Yeah, that would be a good way, I think, of expressing it. Thank you for that.
And Kun-san, when you're saying feeling versus emotion, or I guess that would be perception in the five aggregates of craving, you're talking about just that, the second category of feeling, where we have the tone of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And then the next area of actually perception is labeling, but then that would be the emotion would fall under mental formation, I think, right? And that is where you've already gone through, you've had this tone or kind of a sense of, yeah, I like it, no, I don't like it, or whatever. So the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. But then the when you get further down, the emotion is much more complex. So it becomes far more, I guess, intense, like Barbara was saying, or you were saying. So, and it's more like even nuanced, because it could be linked to a thought as well. So it's not just the emotion, but it's an emotion and series of thoughts, or a thought that's happening. It's happening all at once, and you kind of have to detangle the spaghetti just to see what you got there, you know?
That's a great way of putting it.
Isn't it also that the emotion is more subjective? That there is usually some interpretation involved.
Yes, I would say so.
Whereas feeling is a feeling can, you know, it begins, I think, in a more neutral way, but then it changes.
Yes, I would say exactly that. Very good point. And that's sort of where we're going now with the mindfulness of the mind. I feel like we haven't really quite unpacked that enough yet. We can do that now. But yes, I think everything that everyone shared would be very accurate. Prahlad, were you going to say something similar?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the feeling, if you donate blood, for example, the feeling is the needle going in your vein, right? And the emotion is, I'm helping somebody. Yeah, I'm donating blood to help somebody's accident. That's the emotion that I can see. That's how I relate feeling to emotion. I have no emotion about the needle going in. It's just a feeling. But the emotion could be relate to what good could this do, or what bad could this do. That's how I see it.
And I think, you know, everybody's experience of these would be quite different. I mean, some people would have strong emotion about the needle. You know, some people actually have a strong fear of needles. And for them, maybe there could be less emotion in thinking that this is doing good for someone. It's just a thought, you know, this is doing good. It's just simply a thought. So I think it's quite interesting to unpack all of the nuance of all of this. So in the Abhidhamma Kosha, the way that we've been doing the practices here at the Institute recently, when we come to bringing awareness or mindfulness of the mind, what we're actually observing here is any virtuous, non-virtuous, or neutral states of mind, as well as positive, negative, or neutral thoughts. So we're seeing what is actually going on in the mind, recognizing when something is positive, helpful, virtuous, recognizing when we're trapped, we're clinging, we're stuck in something that is negative. And the practice itself is really just to, without, have no preference, you know, just in the general characteristics. If we come to the general characteristics, which we haven't really talked so much about here, what we're actually seeing is that the nature of our experiences in our mind, as well as our body, as well as our feeling, is impermanent, is the nature of suffering, and is without self. Those are the general characteristics. So the specific characteristics then of the mind, the particular characteristics of the mind are the thoughts and the mental states. We're seeing if they're virtuous, non-virtuous, neutral. And then the general characteristic that we're coming back to, which is where the Vipassana comes in, is that we're seeing what is the nature of these. Oh, yes, it's changing. You know, as you said, we can see the different pieces of the experience. As you said, we could have, I think it was Annie said, you have an image that comes up. You'll have all of the different pieces, all of the different aspects of our experience. And so that we can apply to everything that we've talked about so far, the body, the feelings, and the mind. Just this continual flow of experience, selfless, empty, compounded by nature suffering. Yeah. So any questions about that, the mindfulness of the mind?
Perfectly clear.
Oh, good. Did I get a 5-star for that? Annie, did you? I think you were going to say something, or no?
I'm hoping that we are going into this with more depth because it still feels very, broad. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So everything we're doing here, very, very broad perspective, and then the immersion. And as always, those of you who've done these Vajrayana online courses before will have all kinds of commentaries coming in, articles by different people, videos to watch. I mean, we're going to really unpack all of this, but it's really wonderful to have an overall sense of where we're going. And if there's confusion coming up, if there's unknown coming up, that's just perfect. Hold it, keep it, keep chewing with it. And then as you're reading, it's like, oh yeah, okay, now I get it. It's not easy material. There's a lot of depth to it.
A question.
Yes.
And that is, I'm trying to better understand the link between the five aggregates and the Vipassana meditation technique. So, for example, when I was meditating, and it was shamatha without support, I had something come up. And so I went through the process of saying, okay, where is this actually coming from? Where is its origin? Let's apply the five aggregates. Let's look at it and take it apart. And so is that entire process that I'm going through, that thinking and analyzing process, what we call the Vipassana meditation?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And so as I said in the last Hot Heart, like one of the powerful things about these practices of the four foundations of mindfulness, we are really we are developing the word that we use in this particular foundation, in this particular vehicle, is samadhi. We're developing samadhi and vipassana at the same time. So it's quite interesting to see how we can inquire into, look into, see the nature of our experience. And at the same time, we're developing this quality of attention, this quality of really being able to see quite clearly.
So I'm sorry to keep asking questions. And if I'm asking too many, please let me know and I'll stop. But I just want to make sure I understand. So like if I'm doing shamatha with or without support, and then I flow into vipassana, and then I return back to shamatha, these meditation techniques are flowing into each other, in and out of each other, as we're going along.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
correct? I just want to make sure I have that correct. Because with shamatha, you actually want to allow thoughts to self-liberate, or emotions to self-liberate. So you wouldn't, thought I had was, but I'm applying to Vipassana. So now I'm moving into analyzing, and I'm not allowing self-liberation to occur because I've just moved into Vipassana meditation. So
that's incorrect. Just to stop you there, that's incorrect.
Okay.
Come back a little
Please.
Bit. So allowing something to self-liberate. So the The definition of shamatha, and I'm just, I think I've just written, we will go into this deeper in the immersion course, but in Tibetan, we use the word shine, shine. She means to have a quality of mind. Oh, let me put it up. Sorry. Oh, where are we? I just... sorry. Oh, gosh. Where did I put it? That's engaging. No, sorry. I can say it without checking what exactly what I said. But basically, in the Tibetan, we have the word breaks down as she, ne. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to have a mind that is slowed down. We use that terminology earlier. You know, usually it's so speedy. And in the practice of calm abiding, or shine, or shamatha, same meaning, we're learning to rest the mind and abide. The mind abides with what is. So the word ne is really to abide. And she is in this quality of peace, in the sense that we're not afflicted. The mind is not afflicted with all of this other stuff that's going on. And so what that looks like in our practice is we're able to rest the mind with what is. It doesn't mean blocking thoughts. It doesn't mean that we're not allowing thoughts to self-liberate. We're just resting, and whatever is going on is here under the current, you know, whatever, but we're just resting with. And it's this quality of just simply knowing, simply resting. And that practice will start to, things start to settle down, and we can be with. And then in the practice of Vipassana, we're moving into, in Tibetan, we call it Lak Tong. And this has got the quality of seeing clearly in a higher seeing, a more superior seeing, a clear seeing, an accurate seeing, seeing something that we wouldn't normally be able to recognize. It's this higher knowing. And so together, we always have shamatha and vipassana together. When we do the vipassana practices, we need this quality of resting, knowing. And then we need this quality of seeing clearly. So it's true that you will, in your practice, be using shamatha as well as vipassana, if that is the intention. So at the beginning of your practice, it's very important to understand what the practice is, in terms of where are we going, what is the outcome, what are we looking for here? Otherwise, we're just shooting in the dark. So in the immersion course, you'll see that everything is laid out in a beautiful sequential way, where one thing segues into the next in a very, very fluid way. It's beautiful to actually go through that experience. So we begin with shamatha, we get the mind to settle down, we get the mind to calm down, and then we slowly bring in the vipassana, where we're actually looking into the experience, seeing the nature, seeing things as they are in this superior way. And with that repetition, things start to loosen and open up. So I wouldn't say that in the practice of shamatha, thoughts are arising and self-liberating, and in vipassana, they're not.
I didn't mean to say that. I'm sorry. What I actually, so I was not very articulate. What I meant to say is that the way that I have been doing it, whether it's the correct way or not, is calm abiding exactly as you described it. And so thoughts and emotions are continuing to go on. But if I have, let's say, a rather stronger emotion or thought, there is a bit of curiosity where I say, I want to apply vipassana to this. And so I apply the five aggregates to look at it and break it down. It can definitely dissolve and liberate just by going through that process. Absolutely. I understand both can do that. I just wanted to make sure it's okay to allow these to flow in and out of each other, because that's that's how I'm just doing it, and this is what's naturally arising for me. And it's like, oh, this one sounds like a good, or feels like a good candidate for Vipassana. I want to check it out because it's so strong. So let's see what's going on there, and then apply the five aggregates. So that's at least what I've been doing, whether that's correct or not.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. That sounds really wonderful. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we go through the sequence, and then we can just use whatever we have, our wisdom, our skillful means of applying whatever is particularly helpful at any particular time. It can be good to go through them, have the intention at the beginning for a particular practice. Otherwise, we can be a little bit lost. Oh, gosh, what am I, you know? So we have our intention of whatever our particular practice is at the beginning. And that can change given what's happening in your life, in your body, in your system. Or it could change in the middle of a practice. Something quite powerful could come up that's quite overwhelming. And again, you can change. But overall, this systematic process of going through one by one really gives us the skills to be able to work and familiarize with each technique. And then, as I said at the beginning, at the end, we really come to this point where our practice, one of the words we could use is kind of blended, where we see everything that's arising. We're not looking at the body, the mind, or feelings, mind or phenomena. We're looking at the entire system, the entire experience, and seeing the nature of impermanence and so forth. But I think what you're saying there sounds great, Pam. It sounds really, and it's helpful for you. That's a good thing. You know, if it's helpful, that's good. If you're getting in a muddle, then maybe not so good. Great. So maybe we could just move into this last of the four foundations then, which is the foundation of the close awareness of phenomena, mindfulness of phenomena. So would anybody like to have a go at what we're talking about here? What is the mindfulness of phenomena?
Everything that comes up, that's how I've been seeing it. You know, just if you sense something in your body, you notice it. If you hear something, you notice it. If you have a reaction to it, you notice it. If a thought comes, you just, whatever comes, you are aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you, Annie. Would anybody else like to add to that?
It's like choiceless awareness, river-like awareness.
Yeah. Edwin spoke about that beautifully in his reflection. Yeah. So something that I picked up on when I was just going again through Mingyur Rinpoche's teaching on inner freedom, he was saying that these are all of the experiences that serve as the basis of this ego clinging, the phenomena. They all serve as the basis of this ego clinging. And so, as you said, we're really observing our experience of hearing, smelling, tasting, the sensations, knowing when concepts even are arising in the mind. So it's really looking at the array of the five sense doors. And I think Stephen, and as I said, we'll go into this in more detail in the immersion course, but something that I've really enjoyed is the book by Stephen Goodman. I've raved about it a few times now. If you don't have that book, I'd highly recommend it. Let me just quickly grab it. I'll show you. Yeah, this book, let me unblur, or I can hold it. No. Yeah, can you see there? Yeah, book by Stephen Goodman. So Stephen goes into, I love the way that he presents this. It's one of those real aha moments. He talks about each of the sense doors as being like a different channel you know, almost as if you're going through channels of a radio. You can see how you're tapping into a different radio station. Well, that the radio station came up in my mind when I heard the word channel. But what we're really seeing, as we know from the Abhidharma, getting more specific about our experience, we know what channel we're on at any particular given time. And that, for me, really brought to life what is so special about the Abhidharma. You know, we can have choiceless awareness, as Edwin talked about, and as Minka Rinpoche talked about. We're moving from one object to another. But the specificity that I love of the Abhidharma is we're really recognizing what exactly is going on right now. Is it channel one, hearing, or is it channel two, seeing, or is it channel three, sensation? And so breaking the experience down in that way, I found to be tremendously helpful. So yeah, if you haven't got this book already, as I say, I really recommend it. Having gone through the this course before we go in, the what do we call it, the essence course, having gone through the essence course, we've got enough now, enough of a basis, I feel, to jump into a book like this and not be overwhelmed. Oh gosh, what are we talking about here? We've got a really good foundation so that when you go into this now, you'll be like, oh wow, right, okay, this is what we're talking about. It will really bring it to life.
Yeah, in my opinion,
can I ask
yeah,
a question?
Sorry, I was yeah. going to say that my opinion is that this is the best written book for simplicity. At the same time, the complexity is enormous. Yes. You know, you have to really read it again and again and again. But I find this really makes Buddhism a scientific approach to yeah. this philosophy, and I absolutely love it. So I'm looking so forward to the immersion course, you know, that I can begin to understand the whole thing. Thank you.
I'm the same, but I'm absolutely the same. Yeah. And I didn't know I had a scientific mind, but I'm just getting so excited about it. Yeah.
Can I got the book soon after the transmission course in the very beginning, or as soon as I could, I ordered it. And I started reading it before, and I was so excited also. And then I kind of went, oh, I couldn't take it. It was too much, and I put it down, thinking yeah. that you would give us assignments or something. Are you going to say read these chapters, or are we just supposed to do it on our own? What was the intention?
I think when we go into the immersion course, there will be recommended chapters related to the specific sections that we're working on. But I totally get what you're saying, Annie. You know, that was my experience also when I first read the book. Over summer, I was trying to get ready for this, and it's like, oh my goodness. And now, you know, having gone through the immersion, through the essence, listened to the guest speakers, the voices, and had Rinpoche's teachings, it's like, wow, it's really gone from... it's a totally different experience. So I'd recommend that you could do either. You could just dive into it now if you want to, or you can wait for the immersion. And I mean, saying that, of course, I'm a little bit ahead of you. I'm watching Rinpoche's teacher getting ready bit by bit. So maybe when you get to each section would be most helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Wonderful. So with all of this said, would anybody like to, I was hoping we could really kind of talk about our meditation practice today. I thought that would be quite interesting. Does anybody have anything coming up in their practice that they'd like to share, and anywhere that they're getting aha moments, or how is your practice actually unfolding? Yeah, Pa.
Yeah, we, actually, matter of fact, once a week, we have a small group of two people from Europe and me and another guy from Japan. We're meditating on the same, we're doing the meditation that you teach during each week, right, in each chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest we talked about it. We do meditation half an hour, then we discuss the questions associated. And my biggest problem, not problem, but difficulty has been emotions, because I couldn't figure out what the hell emotions were, really, from the beginning. You know, do I have to make something up that I didn't like when my mother told me off, or, you know, what was it? So the aha moment for me has been that I'm grasping what the hell emotions are, rather than feelings. Like I said, you know, the needle goes in as a feeling. The emotion is, does it help anybody? You know, so, but apart from the other meditations, more of body or like that, it's more realistic to me. The emotion was more difficult to grasp, but I'm getting better at it.
Yeah, that's a great point, Power. And I think, you know, the way that we've been working with emotions here at the Institute as we've been going through these practices, we can bring up an emotion intentionally if we feel to. But what we're actually looking to when we do that is we can recognize the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral sensations in the body. That's really, really helpful. It's good to know, again, sort of where we're going with this practice. How are we breaking this down? What is the lens that we're taking? And so we could either try to tune in to unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral at any given time. You know, could be construction work going on next door, a lot of unpleasant sensations coming up. But again, we could also bring up something from the past, something that really upset us, something that was quite challenging. And as soon as we do that, we can actually come into the feeling tone in the body and observe pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And again, we could even be, you know, apprehension about something in the future. Anything. So it could be the past, it could be the future. But as we said before, there's always some kind of feeling tone there. And so I would view it in that way for now. I think Jennifer.
Thanks, Kunzang. I'm still struggling a little bit with the neutral or the not pleasant or unpleasant feeling. Because I can recognize it, but the fact that it's associated with ignorance rather than equanimity, I'm still struggling. I don't know if you have some examples that, you know, relate it to ignorance. That's where I'm having a bit of trouble. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't really gone into the depth of the Vipassana yet. All of these experiences where we're coming to when we get to the general characteristics are the impermanence, the non-self, and the dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness. I'm coming up as a bit of a blank right now. I'm sorry. When I get a bit of a blank, it's the moment we come off the call and I'm like, oh yeah, that was the answer. But I'll hold that, and I can share something in the forum if you pop your question there, or we can talk about it in the next session. Right okay, now, I'm
thank you.
A bit of a blank. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, thanks, Kunz.
Pam, I think this might be the last.
Yeah. Yes, I am. I'm wondering about the fifth aggregate, consciousness. So as I read the definition, it said consciousness is the awareness of the other three or four, so that you can see that it's happening. And I'm wondering, is that kind of like the little A awareness? Because the big A awareness is the observer behind the whole thing, behind the whole experience. So the consciousness is not, they're still, it's still defiled, it's still tainted in a way. Whereas when you talk about not self, that's the mirror, what Sony Rinpoche calls the mirror eye, which is even further removed is the wrong word, but I think you get what I'm saying. So I'm trying to, is there like a big A and a little A, you know, when you're talking about consciousness in relationship to awareness of the other aggregates?
I would say not. We have the consciousness that's related to each of the sense doors, the eye consciousness, ear consciousness, and so forth. So we have that interpretation that's going on. I don't think we really, in the Abhidharma, in the foundational vehicle, we don't really talk about the big A, the big awareness. It's a little bit like, you know, the self-liberation. We don't really use that terminology either. So it can be quite challenging where we're moving from a jhana that we're far more familiar with, Vajrayana, yeah, and trying to kind of interpret it or understand it through that lens, and the two just don't match up. It just doesn't work in that way.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so Annie's just typed in, Lama Trini said that neutral was more subtle, yes, that it is obscured by the more obvious clinging and aversion, yes, and that once those have been cleared up, then the neutral will become clearer, yes. Great, thank you, Annie, yes.
I think that's what he said.
Yeah, yeah, the neutral is more, we can see it's more subtle, it's quite easy to see.
We can see it, because that's why it's ignorance, because we can't see it. It's uh-huh. there, but it's just more subtle, so we can't see it. Uh-huh. We're ignorant uh-huh. of it. I think that's what he said.
That makes total sense to me. It's like our awareness is just becoming more and more refined, and yeah, more and more fine-tuned. Wonderful. Well, thank you, everyone, for a wonderful session. I hope this has been helpful, and I really encourage you to engage in these practices as much as you can. And get on Amazon and order your books if you haven't already. And I look forward to our next session together. So maybe we can just take a moment to think of any goodness that's come from our practice, from our studying together, our grappling with these teachings. Thinking of our teachers, Nyingma Rinpoche, all of our teachers, going all the way back to the Buddha, where these precious teachings come from. And just bringing to mind all of that virtue, all of that merit, and dedicating it all to the awakening of all beings. May all beings know true peace. This world so much in need of wisdom, compassion, and awareness. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a beautiful, beautiful week. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. See you.
Thanks, Kunzang. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.